Old Sparks and the River by Edwin Isaacson Whiting. I'm thinking of a time when I trusted my all to my horse. Winter snow and spring rain were sending more water down the little Colorado River than the natives had ever seen. Cattlemen were rejoicing as Arizonians always do when it rains. Arizonians, they say, never get enough rain, but some were beginning to wonder. The Lyman Dam was full for the first time, and overflowing. The engineers were fearful, saying it was past the danger level. A stream of water rushed over the overflow, 100 wide, and deep enough to swim a horse. The Mexicans along the river below the dam had mostly left their homes and moved to high ground, thereby doubtless saving many lives. When the dam gave way, a flood half a mile wide in places came down the Little Colorado and struck the town after midnight. Our sheriff on night duty heard and saw the water coming, fired several warning shots, and miraculously saved many lives, although there were a number of narrow escapes. My brother Ernest put a family one behind the other, and led them 2 blocks through water armpit deep. His wise leadership kept them from panicking in the wild flood waters. Mrs. Dannenbaum, who had been jerked out of bed and led through the water up to her neck, was so frightened that she had to have first aid, along with a number of others, who came to our home above the flood line. Horsemen were sent down the river to warn those in the flood's path. There were no phones, they must outrun the flood. Norman Freeman's horse fell dead under him, but the others succeeded and most of the people were saved. Ralph Whiting ran his horse 8 miles to the meadows, crossed the river ahead of the big flood, but in enough water to swim his horse, and at 3 o'clock in the morning got the jolly family out of bed, into their wagon, across the mile-wide river bottom, and reached higher ground with the crest of the flood coming up a foot or so on the wagon. A few moments more would have been serious. The wisdom and work of others saved many more, but still there were 7 drowned. Men came from everywhere to search for the lost ones, and to help the homeless and needy. We first hunted on the west side of the river. We lived on that side, and no one dared to try to cross to the east. We reasoned that we were more apt to find them on our side, and we did find 5 bodies there, 2 of Ellis and Jen Palmer's children, Mrs. Ray and her child from Colorado, and Mrs. Saavedra, a beautiful young woman. That night we called a meeting to report, and to decide what to do on the morrow. The general opinion was that the 2 missing girls were on the east side of the river, and because a number of people had gotten out on the west side, there was a good chance that the 2 might be alive and alone on the east side. The bishop asked if anyone thought the river could be crossed, and called for volunteers. Finally, Pete Peterson volunteered, then others, until we had 12. We were to assemble at the river's edge east of St. John's at daylight. As soon as it started to get light, we were there ahead of time. A cold rain was falling, and whatever courage we felt in the meeting the night before was pretty well gone. I think my feelings would pretty well describe the others. Remember, we were drylanders, raised in Arizona. Most of our water experience had been in a $3. I am sure that even a good swimmer would have been helpless in the turbulent muddy river that was rushing past us. For one, I was afraid. I wished there was some way I could back out, but could see none, so I waited for our captain. We all waited. There was some little bantering and arguing. Several said it was foolish to try, that it could mean more loss of life. I wished we had Moses to part the waters. The longer we waited, the more embarrassing our situation became. Finally, under pressure, our captain decided to try first. He spurred his horse, and waded out a short distance a couple of times, and then the horse whirled, and dashed back to shore as if he too sensed the danger. The captain called for someone else to try, as his horse was no good for water. So the second fellow, who had volunteered the night before, was called, on the theory that the first to volunteer should be the first to go. His horse showed more courage, and went out to where he had to swim, but he must have been a dry land horse, or the rider threw him off balance, because the current turned him over and started him rolling downstream. Those fellows on the bank were better at roping than in the water, and with surprising dexterity they roped that man and horse and brought them back to shore. My turn came next. I was desperately afraid, but I was riding Old Sparks and we knew each other. Will Sherwood came up to me and put his hand on my knee and said, "Turn him loose, slap him on the side of the head, if you have to turn him." I think the last fellow turned his horse over by pulling on the rein. As there was no way out, I headed Old Sparks for the stream. He waded beautifully. When he started to float, I wanted to pull the rein but remembered what Will had said. He started turning over, and I remember grabbing the horn and throwing my weight the other way, which righted him and he began swimming for the other shore. We were carried downstream about 100 yards, but landed like a veteran. Horses are like men, after they had seen one cross, most of the others followed without much trouble. At dark that evening, we swam back to report that we had not found the two little girls. In fact, they were never found. That was 1915, but I still have a vivid remembrance of most everything that happened. It is hard to put things like this into words, but in my own mind, I have a picture of trusting my life to my faithful horse and of him coming through like a friend. For years after, whenever we ran this loved racer, people would tell of his swimming the river, or speak of it if a flood came down the river. I never go to the riverbank without memories.